With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's something kind of darkly poetic about the idea that Brian Koberger, the man accused of one of the most methodical and chilling crimes in modern American memory, was reading "Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway." That's the accusation, anyway. Not a manifesto, not some obscure academic text on criminal psychology, but a self-help book. And look, there's nothing wrong with a self-help book. There's nothing wrong with this book. So don't take it as that. It's just the irony of the man we're talking about reading it and what he did. And again, this is not a book that's going to make you turn into a killer and feel the fear and do it anyway in terms of what he did. So let's take a step back from that too. It's a paperback that millions of people have picked up in moments of insecurity or self-doubt. Nothing wrong with it. Looking for strength, reassurance, maybe even redemption. And in his hands, it becomes something else kind of different entirely. When investigators took Koberger into custody in December of 2022, they cataloged the entire contents of his small apartment in Pullman, Washington. Among the everyday items, knives, gloves, receipts, laptops, there was allegedly a book, unnamed in the initial Pennsylvania warrant returns, but described in one chillingly simple note, book with underlining on page 118. Months later, reporting by the Idaho Statesman identified that book as Susan Jeffers' Feel the Pain and Do It Anyway. And one line, underlining on page 118, feels almost like a riddle left behind by the universe. What did he underline? Why that page? What was he trying to absorb? We don't know the exact sentence he marked, but we know the book's message. That fear is inevitable. And courage is not the adolescence of fear, but the act of moving forward despite it. For most readers, Jeffers' message is empowering. For Koberger, it might have been something far darker. A manual for overriding empathy. Empathy he didn't already have. A framework for domination described as self-improvement. It's like pouring the wrong type of gasoline into the wrong type of engine. What could possibly go wrong here? Let's talk about the book for a moment. Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. It's not a sinister work. It's an optimistic one. It's about reclaiming agency, silencing the anxious mind, and realizing that most fear is simply anticipation. The mind's trick that stops us from living fully or sometimes making bad choices. Jeffers tells her readers the only way to get rid of fear, the fear of doing something, is to go out and do it. In the hands of someone wounded, it's liberating. It's in the hands of someone disturbed, it becomes permission. Because to a person like Koberger, whose world seems to have been built around power, control, and alienation, doing it anyway might not mean confronting public speaking or rejection. It might mean crossing the line between thought and action, theory and violence. And before we continue more into this, I want to get your thoughts on YouTube in the comment section. If you're not there already, search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski. That's where you will find us. And you can comment there if you're listening to us on the podcast platforms. Thank you. Please do hit subscribe there, but also do check out our YouTube page so you can interact with us there and watch us do these as well. But that's where you can really get into this and we can have a conversation. So from everything we've learned about him, Brian Koberger was obsessed with control. Physical, psychological, intellectual. Classmates described him as socially awkward but arrogant. His professors noted his fascination with the mechanics of crime. The emotions of killers, a moment where thought turns into action. He studied criminology, not as a means of prevention, but almost like he was reverse engineering the criminal psyche, figuring out what it takes to override normal human restraint. He wanted to feel something, anything, but fear? Fear was his weakness. That's what makes the discovery of this particular book so haunting. It fits right into his twisted psychology, because feel the fear and do it anyway is about transcending fear through willpower, through mental reprogramming. And that idea, when filtered through the mind like Koberger's, it could easily become the ideology of control. The premise of Jeffers' book is that fear never goes away. You just change your relationship with it. She writes that all fear ultimately comes down to one idea. I can't handle it. The goal, she says, is to internalize the opposite. I can handle anything. Now think about that through the lens of a man who spent his graduate career trying to understand killers. Not to condemn them, but to comprehend them. Someone who, according to multiple reports, was deeply uncomfortable in his own skin, rejected socially, and haunted by feelings of inadequacy. I can handle anything? To most of us, that's a mantra for courage. To him, it could have been a declaration of superiority, an erasure of vulnerability. Because for people with narcissistic or psychopathic traits, handling fear isn't about healing. It's about power. It's about suppressing emotion, overriding conscience, and proving that they're the exception to human limitation. There's something chilling about imagining Koberger sitting alone at night, reading the book under lamplight, tracing those words with a pen, underlining them with surgical precision, as though rehearsing a mindset. You can almost picture it, the criminology student studying himself. And this is where feel the fear and do it anyway becomes more than self-help text to someone like Koberger. It becomes kind of a mirror, because self-help at its core is about internal change. But in the mind of someone like Koberger, change doesn't mean empathy or humility. It means control. Control over self, control over others, control over fear. And when a person like that reads, you must take responsibility for your own life, they don't hear a call for accountability. They hear justification for autonomy. The idea that no one else matters. And that's what separates normal readers from pathological ones. Interpretation. When you strip away empathy, self-help becomes self-worship. That's what's so dangerous about individuals like Koberger, who intellectualize emotion rather than feel it. He didn't experience fear the way most people do. Fear to him was something to study, something to overcome mechanically. In his 2011 essay, Crime Scene Scenario Final, he wrote about criminals as cutting themselves off from moral reasoning. He wasn't repulsed by that idea. He was fascinated by it. And that fascination turned clinical curiosity into obsession. And when obsession meets ideology, even a soft, well-meaning one like feel the fear and do it anyway, you get something monstrous. When Jeffers tells readers that pushing through fear is less frightening than living with the underlying fear that comes from helplessness, she means it as a challenge to live fully. But for someone like Koberger, who may have perceived his own helplessness as humiliation, it becomes a battle cry. Overcome helplessness by taking action. Prove control through behavior. Feel the fear and do it anyway. If he saw himself as powerless in social life, in relationships, in self-worth, this philosophy could easily have become a tool to reclaim a perverted sense of agency, not by confirming internal fear, but by externalizing it, by transferring it onto others. And that's a twisted thing about control-based personalities. When they can't master their own emotions, they master someone else's. That's what violence is at its core. It's a transfer of fear. You make someone else fear what you can't process yourself. So what does this tell us about Koberger's psyche in the window leading up to the murders? It suggests that he wasn't just preparing physically or logistically. He was preparing psychologically, conditioning his mind to bypass hesitation, suppress anxiety, and commit to a plan. Reading Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway could have been part of that internal training, a rehearsal for courage, twisted into justification for action. That underlined passage on page 118, whatever it was, might have been his personal mantra, his intellectual armor, his excuse. And that's the most disturbing part, because it reminds us that evil doesn't always announce itself with rage or ideology. Sometimes it dresses itself up in self-help language, in calm, rational, therapeutic phrasing, while quietly justifying the unthinkable. And let's zoom out here for a second as we continue to dissect this. And again, I want to hear your thoughts on the YouTube comments. There's a broader lesson here about how self-help culture intersects with pathology. Self-help books tell you to own your power, to take control, to manifest your destiny. For most of us, those are harmless platitudes. For someone predisposed to narcissism or psychopathy, those phrases are fuel. They reinforce the illusion that they're the architect of everything, even other people's suffering. They misread empowerment as entitlement. You see it across countless criminal profiles, from corporate fraudsters to cult leaders to killers. They all talk about power, mastery, destiny, self-belief, but it's never about growth. It's about domination. That's why in Koberger's case, this book is more than evidence. It's a psychological breadcrumb. It tells us he wasn't spiraling uncontrollably. He was rehearsing. He was refining. He was training himself to feel nothing. Now, some people might argue, maybe it's a coincidence. Maybe he just owned the book. Maybe he picked it up at a thrift store. Maybe it means nothing. And maybe. But context matters. Because everything we know about him, the pattern of thought, the writings, the behavioral analysis, points to a man who didn't stumble into violence. He studied it. He dissected it. He prepared for it like an academic preparing for a thesis. So the odds that this specific book with this specific theme was in his possession by accident, unlikely. This was a man trying to reprogram himself to feel less, to think more, and to act decisively, no matter the moral cost. That's not self-help, that's self-erasure. It's another layer here, one that's almost tragic in a cosmic sort of way, because Jeffers' book, when stripped of its misuse, is really about trust. It's about surrendering control, not seizing it. It teaches that true courage isn't power, it's vulnerability. But people like Koberger can't process that. Vulnerability feels like death to them. Fear feels like failure. So instead of accepting fear, they annihilate it. And when you can't coexist with fear, you can't coexist with empathy either. You can't feel for others when you've numbed yourself to your own humanity. In that sense, the book he underlined might be a perfect metaphor for his internal conflict. A man trying to intellectualize emotions he was incapable of truly experiencing. If anything, feel the fear and do it anyway reveals just how detached he'd become from normal emotional reality. It's a mindset of someone who sees courage not as healing, but as conquest. For him, fear to him was not something to live with. It was something to dominate. And that's what makes his story so unsettling. He used psychological language as camouflage for pathology, and he turned philosophy into performance. Every gesture of self-control, every intellectual exercise, every paper he wrote about the criminal mind, it wasn't about understanding others. It was about constructing the perfect mask for himself. So what can we learn from that? That fear is not the enemy. Indifference is. That when self-help becomes self-worship, when introspection turns into obsession, when control replaces compassion, that's when humanity erodes. Koberger wasn't trying to feel the fear and do it anyway. He was trying to eliminate fear entirely. And in the process, he eliminated empathy, morality, and connection more than he already didn't have it. What's left after that is machinery, calculation, and the ability to do what he allegedly did in Moscow, Idaho, and is convicted of doing. It's almost eerie how much you can read in between the lines of a single underlined page. That one act, pen to paper, marking a passage meant to empower, might be the clearest window we have into his transformation from student into suspect. He wasn't inspired by evil. He was inspired by self-control. And that's what makes it so terrifying. Because when you take something designed to help, something that's designed to help you face fear and twist it into a blueprint for erasing it, you don't become brave. You become hollow. And hollow people do unthinkable things when they mistake power for purpose. Tell me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. I can't wait to see them. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Follow us, like us, subscribe, hit the bell, do a dance, do a jig, whatever. I don't know. But do please subscribe and let us know your thoughts. And hit subscribe wherever you're listening to us on the podcast platforms as well. We do greatly appreciate that. There's a lot more on the way. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.